We are live back with another episode of Shift the Narrative on Everything Autism. I'm Torin Kearns, and as usual, I'm joined by the autism sage herself, Mama Baden. How are you?
Está bien. I'm in Spanish mode since I've been away listening to only Spanish, even though I live in Mexico. I don't go outside of the home because I work inside the home. So my brain is still on Spanish time.
Well, you've been in Spanish countries for a while. Well, Puerto Rico, which technically is a colony. It's not its own independent country. Yes. It's effectively a colony, but they speak Spanish there. And then you've been in Mexico for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then you were in the country that's going to be the topic of the podcast today, Guatemala. Yes. Not the history of the country. Yes. Stacy was on a relief mission to rural Guatemala. She just got back, where she basically shined her grace on dying kids with autism and effectively did that like religious thing where she puts her hands on the kid and the kid stops being autistic. So she was part of this religious mission that went to the rural jungles of Guatemala, put their hands on some kids, made them non-autistic. Real miracle stuff, like the stuff we see like the Mormons do. It really inspirational type shit. On a serious note, Stacy is just fresh back from Guatemala, where she was in rural areas helping parents who have autistic kids. I was about to say helping parents who have Guatemalan kids. Jesus Christ, this is going to be rough. Helping parents who have autistic kids in rural areas of Guatemala, where they're like third world poor. So you think we don't have access to resources, picture how bad it is there. So she was really doing the Lord's work there, so to speak, to really help these parents help their kids. So this episode is going to be all about the stuff she did, the stuff she saw, and just the general experience. So Stacy, fire away.
I was just looking at the time when you said fresh out of Guatemala. I'm like, literally, it's been 24 and a half hours since I left Guatemala, and it was hard to leave because it was beautiful weather. I was on the lake in this sort of, in the middle of the mountain. I mean, literally, I was in the middle of nowhere. I did a lesson today with my homeschool student, and we did our geography lesson on my travel and where I was and like which ocean was west and east. So we did our geography lesson around it, and I said, well, I took one plane from Monterrey to Mexico City to Guatemala City, Guatemala City to Flores, and then I got in a car and drove through the mountain to this little town called El Remate, Guatemala. And it was amazing. It was, you know, when I go volunteer, and I love to volunteer, I always feel like, yes, I'm giving, but I always feel like I get so much more back. And I will just share, just to set the tone, that Friday I went to volunteer at the Children's Center, and I'll give a little bit more details, but Friday was the last day at the Children's Center. And so Friday night I was kind of sitting in the hammock, and folks at the place where I was staying were all hanging out. There was a group of dentists that were doing dental work, and I was really emotional just processing. And it wasn't so much processing, oh, the poor children in Guatemala. It was processing the fact that, you know, why am I the, I feel like the, like, so the chosen one, the blessed one, the lucky one to be able to meet the most amazing children around the world. I mean, the most amazing children I feel like I've met around the world. And very thankful that I was able to go to Guatemala. And the question that everyone asks, and I don't know if you want to lead the question in, Torin, because I know I'm doing a lot of talking, but, you know, people, when I was there, said, well, how did you get here? How are you here? Who are you with, right? What group are you with? And the quick story is, there is a volunteer with an organization that was in the village, and they had gone, I think it was their third time going to volunteer at the Children's Center, and they met a family with a little boy who was just recently diagnosed, and she wanted to help the family, and she was an ESL teacher, but not necessarily knew anything about autism. So she ran across one of my webinars, And then she reached out to the company that sponsored the webinar. And then I was connected with her. And so then we met on Zoom. And then I said, why don't I just meet you there? Right. So I did. I used personal funds and went to Guatemala. I don't buy shoes. I don't buy clothes. I buy life experiences, good food and good coffee and cold beer and yummy wine, right? So that's what I do with my money. Everyone has priorities and I love volunteering. So I went with the intention of doing autism specific. And I did so much more than I went there to do. So I'm gonna pause. And if you have any questions, because I could just talk and talk and talk about the trip.
Well, this episode, we want you to talk. We want to know about your experiences. But the question that first comes to my mind, because I am a very ignorant American, mm-hmm. is I was told, I've been told for the past, it's 2024 or so, past 9 years by a very reliable, very honest, fat orange man, that these people are criminals and rapists, and a horde of men, entirely men, are coming into our country to destroy our country and steal our white women.
Yes.
So were you scared being down there? Because on an honest note, like no joke aside, I was scared because mm-hmm. of just the steady diet of these like demon monster things yep. who were coming over the border. I listened to that every day on the news from both mm-hmm. sides. So I mm-hmm. was legitimately, and I'm not joking, I was legitimately worried for you because I was like, oh. I hope she doesn't get kidnapped by a cartel member or like
yeah.
the Chupacabra or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, interestingly enough, I felt very safe. And I find that when I go to places, because this is not the first time I've volunteered in a, you know, sort of not American space, but people are just people, and people are trying to make, you know, ends meet, trying to feed their kids, trying to have shelter. I was mentioning right before the podcast that wherever you go, yes, you see on the media, Guatemala looks very poor, and it is a third world country, and their poor is very different than our poor in the States, but there's also very wealthy people there, right? Very, very wealthy people there, and like everywhere, there are people, the have and the have-nots, right? And then I think the difference is in third world countries, the have-not is like have-not running water, but also no access to running water, right? Not even anywhere to go to get running water, or days without food because there is no sort of government support, right? I think that's one of the things that people in the States always say, oh, you know, why don't they just pull up their bootstraps in Guatemala and why don't they just get their country together? I'm like, they don't have support. Like, it's not like the United States. So this lady, the children's center that I went to volunteer at is run and was founded by a lady who left Canada 30 years ago and never left Guatemala and put together all of these things. And we will put the link to her organization because she's doing amazing things. She has a children's center. She lives within the village. It's her community, it's her family. She has made it her home. She has a women's center. She has a dental clinic. She has a medical clinic. She has things that are available and accessible to a community, a village that would not have had that if she would not have started it. And thank goodness that people are willing to donate their time or their money so that, you know, the community can take advantage of what she's put together. So I was fortunate enough to meet this little autistic boy, and his mother said it was okay if I said his name and showed his picture. But his name was Alejandro. And Alejandro has, you know, I talk a lot about parents and how parents make a difference. And after meeting her and talking to her for 30 minutes, I said, he's going to be fine. You know, even though Guatemala may not understand autism, even though the schools may not, you know what to do. And that's not as big a deal in Guatemala as it is in the States. But his mom and his dad kept saying, We have a very special little boy, right? And we're just worried that people will treat him unkindly. But we know that he's a very special little boy, and we want to learn and we want to understand. So they were open to learning, which for me is super inspiring, because there are so many families in the United States that don't want to learn and understand their children, that don't want to take the time. And this family, you know, struggles. I mean, they are, you know, they work very hard to get through every day to get food on the table, and they want to learn. And that is very inspiring to me. So that was really great. And Alejandro is going to be fine. He's amazing. I will say the one thing about, and I said this before about Puerto Rico, you know, children in other countries have access to outside all day, every day. So their sensory needs are usually met. There's no helicopter parent. There's no stop, don't run. There's no be careful down the stairs. The children at this children's center played like children are supposed to play. So when I asked the parents of the two autistic individuals that I met about meltdowns, they looked at me like, oh, usually it's like if we don't have milk, right? If we don't have the food item that they want, they get upset or meltdown, or someone disrupts their order of toys or their lineup of toys, right? But throughout the day at the children's center, you see them engaging with other kids and stepping away when they need to move around, and everybody gets to move around. Everybody gets to move around. No one says, stop playing in the street. No one says, well, the street is safe, but no one says stop. And so that within itself is the difference between our kiddos who have to sit for 90 minutes, sit, which is, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, it's frustrating when I hear people say my child is severe. I'm like, no, the environment just needs to be changed, right? I'm not saying that folks don't have more needs. I'm saying our children are throwing chairs in class because they don't get any access to outdoor time. They don't get their sensory needs met. And these kids, all the kids at the children's center, I mean, it was really funny. Even when kids like would run and fall, no one gets alarmed. I mean, it's like when I grew up, you're outside for hours, your parents don't know where you're riding your bike, and you scrape your knee and you deal with it later, right? You just brush it off. And it was really fun to see the kids be kids, but despite the fact of not having the amenities, not having iPads, not having a ball at their house to play with, and not having a lot of stuff, the children were just filled with joy because they were able to be children. They were able to play and be children and get messy and get dirty and just be kids. And so that within itself, I think, is one of the reasons why I think everyone should go to another place, you know, especially a place that's not necessarily as modernized. And not that Guatemala doesn't have a big city, but there's something to be said about happy children, because it's so rare. It's just so rare. So I'm going to pause for just a minute, Torin. And
well, one of the things I'd like to say is, as much as I respect everything you just said, it doesn't fit my preconceived biases and the narrative I have in my head. Yes. Of those sorts of places and those sorts of people, because I lack critical thinking skills and I just believe whatever the TV tells me. So I struggle with the idea that in certain aspects, the kids in these rural areas and these third world rural areas are better off in certain aspects than kids in better, more privileged circumstances in first world countries due to our school system being so messed up. Yeah. I understand that's what you said, but in my head, because once again, I lack critical thinking skills, I believe everything the TV tells me, all I hear is, so you're saying everything is perfect over there and we're evil and you hate America. So my question is, why do you hate America?
Oh, that's really good.
On a serious note, I do find it really interesting that in some ways, because of the freedom that comes with the crushing poverty, that their sensory needs are being met better than in more privileged areas, which I'm going to be honest, pisses me off. Like, I sound cool, but I'm actually boiling with rage because we have all of these resources.
Yes.
Unless I understand inner city public schools are very underfunded. I came from them. I get it. But compared to like where you were doing your charity work, there's still a lot more funding. There's still stuff that could be done, simple stuff that could be done. They don't have any funding. They have nothing. And none of this stuff is being done despite all the advocacy, despite none of this is being done. Instead, we forced our kids to sit in these classrooms to learn stuff they're not going to use. Then when they melt down, we blame the kids and we write nasty stuff about them in the IEPs. Yes. And then they grow up and then I have to look at my YouTube feed and see video after video of men today are too soft. Here's how you could become a more primal male. I've seen shit like that. So yeah. I it does upset me. I find it interesting, but it also upsets me because we could do those things here. Like, it's not because of some, because what people may think is because of some unique circumstances, because of the poverty, they're able to do this. We could do that stuff here. We could allow kids to move around here.
Yes.
We could have outdoor areas where they're not, even if you live in a city, it's called like a fence. You can make it so they don't run into the streets. It's actually quite easy to keep kids from running into the streets. I did it for a living. It's not really that hard.
Yes.
We have, and then in suburban rural areas of America, there's no excuse because nothing but space. Mm-hmm. So we could do all those stuff for basically free. Mm-hmm. In fact, it would be cheaper than stuff like ABA, than paying ABA counselors to do nothing except screw up our kids.
Yes.
And instead, we choose to dump money into the wrong stuff. So as eye-opening as it is, it's also very upsetting. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
And you know, I'm not, you know, making light of it sucks to be poor and have no water and no food, right? I totally can see that, you know, like even one of the mothers, she's like, oh, I want to do more, right? But I have to work. I have to work, which is three beautiful daughters. And I'll tell you the story about her oldest daughter. That was an unexpected, just wonderful experience.
Well, wait, they work? Because I was told, once again, I was told by the orange man on the TV and all of the people who suck up to the orange man on TV that they just come in this country and drain our social safety net. You know, the one that those same people are trying to cut for American citizens. I was told that they're a drain on the social safety net. So I didn't know they work. Once again, it doesn't fit my narrative.
Yes.
So I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, and working with babies on hip, right? So I'll tell a really funny story in terms of I posted a picture of me on a moto because most folks ride on a moto, like a lot of other countries, right? There's no big cars everywhere. Everybody gets on a motorcycle, but it's not a motorcycle. It's a moto because it's really smaller. I mean, it is, I guess, technically. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
I'm looking up a moto as you speak.
Maybe it's just moto because it's a Spanish word. But anyway, so I posted a picture of me on this moto with this guy driving me down the mountain on rocks and not a road, which was so exciting. I actually felt sorry for the guy because I feel like I was screaming in his ear, "Wee!" with my arms out, having a blast going down this mountain. And when I posted it, I received messages that said, "Where's your helmet?" And I was like, "Ugh, Americans." You know, and of course I know, yes, we have more cars and more lanes in America. I get why we have seatbelts and helmets, but this is how they get around in this country. And you will see a mom, a dad, a toddler, or a school age kid with a baby, no car seats, on a moto. Two adults and two children on a moto, and this is how they navigate the village, right? Up and down the mountain. And everyone is just fine, right? Just fine. So I mean, just like the kids that are playing in the street, they know when to move. Car, like when I was a kid, right? We were like, car, and you get out of the way. Now we want to let our kids go outside, right? We're just
to be fair, it's because our kids would stay in the street and look dead into the headlights like a deer. That's why.
So, you know, it's one of those things where, and I'm going to quickly just go back to the you know, narrative and those things in terms of, yes, it sucks to not have, right? And to be sort of in that third world situation and not have running water, not have a cement floor in your house. It's just a dirt floor. But there is such a sense of community, and there is, you know, children laughing and smiling. And when I think about all of the amenities, and everything has pros and cons, right? I'm not saying that Americans should be like a third world country. I'm saying children here have, you know, iPads and backup iPads, and we have a mental health crisis in this country, right? We have children who cannot have a conversation, not speaking specifically in regards to autism, because they just text and use technology, and there's no social engagement. Kids don't play outside anymore. And, you know, even in Puerto Rico, I appreciated that because we've lost that. And to see children just being children and just wallowing in the delight of being a child. And yes, they only have one ball, and you know, yes, they are probably wondering if they're going to have something to eat, right, that night. But they're just filled with love, right? Just filled with love. And I'll share a story about a volunteer group that was there, some dentists, and they were doing remarkable work. And this is an organization that comes back once or twice a year. And so one of the persons volunteered with the group to put down a cement floor, because that's one of the programs the lady has with her nonprofit. And the family has been living in the mountain with no cement floor, right? Just like these sort of shallow wooden walls. And they're excited. They're getting a wood floor, and, you know, mom can't wait. You're going to put a table on it. And while the folks were there volunteering, the family, they fed them lunch, right? They didn't have to, because the organization provided lunch, but they felt, you know, obligated for whatever reason to feed these people who were putting the floor down, which means they took away food from their children, right? And the guy came back and was appalled that they killed two chickens in front of him and then cooked the chickens and wanted him to eat the chickens. And I said, you do realize that was probably a week or two of food for their family. And you're complaining that you had to watch chickens be killed for food, right? That's what people do in a lot of places. And that's how our chickens get to the grocery store. So we had a really good discussion on cultural competency because, you know, the understanding that this family, they gave their food to people who didn't need to have food given to, right? And that's a huge deal, right? A huge deal. So for him not to see that and appreciate that was really startling and to be honest, really kind of pissed me off. But luckily I was able to approach it in a way so that we were able to have a conversation, because this is a man that is very privileged, right? Lives in Canada and is very privileged and makes a dentist salary and does good work, but still not understanding. So, you know, when you think about the fact that you go to give and people still want to give when they have very little, it puts things in perspective. But I will before, you know, we kind of run out of time, I know I'm like talking a lot because I haven't really processed and talked about it.
We're good on time.
Okay, right. I haven't really fully,
own podcast. We're the ones that set the time limits.
That is true. So I went to support the autistic community, and because my background is in speech therapy, apparently word got out in the village that I was there. And so families were coming with their children who had no verbal skills, not necessarily autistic, but weren't talking. And, you know, it was very sort of like speech therapy was going on, right? And I was modeling for parents and modeling for the volunteers from other countries that, you know, stay at the children's center for a lengthy period of time, and hoping they can sort of carry it out. And there was a little girl that was 8 years old, and everyone kept saying, you know, she doesn't talk, but an American group came down when she was little and said that she was hearing impaired, right? So she doesn't talk, and they don't think that she can hear very well. But her cousin said, when we talk really, really, really loud, she can hear her name, right? So lots of, you know, mixed information. Did she have, you know, an audiologist exam? Can she hear? Can she not hear? What can she hear? How can she hear? And so I have to figure out how to find out this information and communicate with this little girl and see if I can do anything to help her. So they said she loves to play this card game, which is a very visual card game of memory. And so you know how they say when you have one sense that's not there and you are have your other senses that are really in tuned. So clearly her visual senses are extremely good, right? And clearly over time I realized she's been watching. She said, and she's been in first grade for 3 years because they don't know what she knows because she can't communicate. But clearly she has been watching. And I highly suspect she's been learning some words, you know, that you hear or see often, and she's doing a little lip reading. So she's been managing and getting by, and she has her own little sign language that she does with her sisters and with her friends, and she plays, and she's just the happiest little girl. So I had to figure out how to establish a rapport with her. And so they said she likes this card game. So I said, okay, I don't know how to play the card game, and I'm playing this card game and trying to figure out the card game with no communication like from her and watching her. And then other kids start watching. And so they start telling me what I need to do. And of course she is slaughtering me, right? Because she's so good at it. And I've never played the game before, but she's really good at it. And that's okay. I'm not trying to like compete with an 8-year-old. So when you finish, the winner is whoever has the most cards. And I know that those who are listening can't see this, but I'll try to describe it. Or maybe Torin, you can give a description after I show it to you. But she is clearly able to count, right? Even though they don't know what she knows, because she's counting her cards and you can see her fingers moving. And then I said to her, "Quanto cuesta?" Right? How many cards do you have? And she holds up her hands, and this is the way she shows me how many. She holds her hands, and after I said, I asked her how many cards she had, and this is how she showed me that she had 34 cards. She literally used...
The problem is you have to explain it because we're on audio medium. So you just showed hands. No one could see that except for me.
So what she did was, so what I want you to do, Torin, is I want you, I'll explain it. So what she does is she holds up 10 fingers, like showing 10, and then that demonstrates 10, and then she turns them to demonstrate 20, and then she turns them back around to demonstrate 30, and then she holds up 4 fingers, and that's how I knew it was 34. That is a demonstration of an extremely intelligent child, but also a demonstration of when you are born with either a lack of or a sense lost or a different physical sort of capability, you don't know any different. And so you accommodate or you sit in the corner and do nothing. But she clearly figured out a way and was learning from her teacher, which they keep her in first grade because they don't know what she knows. And they keep her, from what I'm understanding, sitting in the back because she can't hear. And she's learning. She's watching. She is motivated to learn. And that was my inspiration to figure out what I could do. And so what I ended up doing was working with her and doing, I fell back on my speech therapy skills of working with deaf kids when I first started. And I taught her how to sign her name in fingerspelling, but I also did some sort of phonemes, right? Some consonants and some vowels. And the highlight of the entire week was on the day when she was the Friday of school, and her parents come to pick up her and her siblings, and she comes to me and she looks at me with that look that children give you that says, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much." And I looked at her and I gave her a hug and I said a couple of things to her. And then I said, "Bye-bye." And she said, "Bye-bye." Like verbally said, "Bye-bye." It was so amazing. And everyone was like, "Oh my gosh." So then, of course, I had to go back, right? Because I was like, I have to meet with her again. But the fact that she was so motivated to want to communicate, and within 4 days, sat with me and did speech therapy, which is not fun to do oral motor speech therapy. And what was so funny was when I went to the house, her sister started mimicking me. And so I taught them to do speech therapy. And so now they're going to practice with her. And I'm going to do a couple of Zoom meetings, but, and I'm going to go back. I have to like find a way to find money to go back. But I just felt so lucky, happy for her, but like, gosh, what an amazing kid that I got to meet and help. And so I told her cousin, I said, I can't wait till I come back and you tell me that she won't stop talking.
I said at the beginning of the episode, Stacey went to our model to cure, to touch kids and cure them of autism. And people thought I was joking. People, you had a girl who couldn't speak. And everyone, and no one thought she knew anything. And now she's talking. You cured them of autism just by putting your magic. You're like the big black dude from the Green Mile. Like just was, truly a miracle worker.
So this is what the lady who, you know, kind of connected me to go there. She said to me, she said, you couldn't see the second day she came, and she was coming up the hill of the school, the stairs, and she saw you and her face lit up. And she said, it's because she knew you had the key to unlock what she had inside. And I'm getting emotional because I haven't really talked about this since the wonderful experience, but gosh, I'm so happy for that little girl and her family, but I am so grateful to be able to have met her. I mean, I can't imagine not knowing she exists in the world because she's amazing. And I don't know what she's going to do with her communication. You know, she may start a deaf school in her village. She may be the one that starts that, because that was her experience of not hearing. And now she's going to be able to communicate verbally and read lips even more. And so I'm super excited for her and her family. And her sisters are just so sweet. They're Daniela's 8, her sister's 6 and 5. And it was so funny because the sister was mimicking me with the speech therapy symbols to make the sounds. And the little girl who is hearing impaired was excited for her sister. Like, she is the one that can't hear and is working hard to produce sounds. Her sister can hear and speak. And she was happy that her sister could do the symbols. And it was just, it was amazing. It was just amazing. So 8 days of my life have just been amazing and changed my perspective on Guatemala. Not that I had a bad perspective on Guatemala, but it's given me insight, and hopefully this will change your narrative and others. And we just need to recognize that, you know, we have a lot of ugly in the world right now, but people are just people. They're just trying to get through the day. And some people have it a little bit more, you know, challenging than others. But I wish I could see that joy and happiness on the playground and the parks in the United States. I see it here in Mexico. You know, I wish I could see that at recess. And it breaks my heart that I don't see that anymore, because we used to have that and we've taken that away from our children. And it was really a boost of energy to my battery. Just, I feel so re-energized. Because there are children that do have joy and do have access to their sensory needs in a naturalistic way, the way it should be. And it just makes a world of difference. So I'm going to pause and get myself together and listen to you.
I just want to say that was truly beautiful. And I want people to take note that there are natural, holistic ways to cure autism. I think that's what we learned today, that all it takes is abject poverty and a sort of not knowing about autism and just sort of doing things by gut feelings and also a special green herb that comes in a tablet that the Lipschitz brand of autism curing products, if you've been listening to this podcast a while, you know what we're talking about, they haven't made the announcement yet, but they're coming out with a product of natural herbs that cure autism based off herbs used in third world countries that allowed the girl that Stacy worked with to be able to speak. Not good therapy, empathy, and understanding. Nah, screw that. The magic, this magic herb, that's what did it. But on a serious note, it actually gives me hope, because obviously the work we do, we see a lot of bad. We see a lot of bad.
Yes.
And yes. It shows me that it's one of those things shows you that a better world is possible, that we can help kids, and that these solutions aren't like insane, impossible, you can't fund them, stuff like that. This is all possible. It's going to take a lot of work.
Yes.
Because the reason these kids are having their sensory needs met is because the funding is so low, they can't afford like the sort of structural education system that we have here. But it kind of just happens to work in their favor in some ways.
Yes.
We can do that here without like exposing our kids to abject poverty.
Exactly.
But, it's going to take work, but it gives me hope that mm-hmm. it is possible to not completely traumatize autistic children in school. Yes. It's possible. And I yes. think, I think just like you, I need that, because like I said, because of the nature of our job, I feel like sometimes I'm in a bubble, mm-hmm. and especially engaged with the autistic community online. You just hear horror stories. Obviously I didn't have the greatest time in school either. So it's nice to see that there are ways that autistics can sort of experience, I've heard called autism joy,
mm-hmm.
in a, I hate to say natural, holistic way, because it sounds like scammer shit, but in a natural, holistic way.
Yeah. It's literally allowing them to be themselves, which is running, jumping, spinning, whatever it is that they need, and not making a big deal out of everything, right? Not making a big deal if they are dirty, right? Or make, like, there are so many things that prevent our children in the United States from just being children. Yes, I do understand that we have, you know, safety. Everyone has to, you know, do safety, but that doesn't mean children can't go outside. And that's really,
it's called a fence. It's called a chain link fence. They're pretty decent. It's no, forget that. It's called adult supervision.
Thank you. Or and even just teaching boundaries. You know, it's amazing.
That
even
takes work though, Stacey. Everything I just described, that takes work.
I'm not trying to do work. I know. And you know, even when there's nothing more frustrating to me when I coach parents and, you know, going outside with their children, it's exhausting, right? Oh my gosh, you know, I blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but they need to be outside. Children need to be outside. And I understand that it's different in certain places. You know, when I grew up, we could go outside by ourselves, and now we kind of sort of helicopter our kids. But I think if we are all consciously thinking about what we want our children's lifestyle to be like, that we want them to be able to play freely, then we can put an effort together, right? You know, just the simple fact of neighbors that used to watch the whole street. What happened to that? We just decided to, whatever. I'm not going to go into that. What I'm saying is my experience was inspiring because, and people have, you know, come down on me because I go to other countries to teach. I go to other countries to volunteer. And I say, you know, I fully believe that God leads me to these amazing children, but also I go where people want to learn. And if someone wants to learn, then I'm going to go there. And to see, even in Ghana, when I went you know, teachers in the States complain about, well, you know, they won't give me money for a laminator, or I can't laminate visuals, or I don't have it in my budget. And all I think is, and I took pictures, I'm sitting here in Ghana where there is maybe one laminator and they have found a way to make visuals, and the visuals are up and they are consistent, even though they don't have iPads for all the children, and they make sure the kids have what they need, right? In a simplistic way, whether it's just playing outside or finding ways to make visuals. You know, the mom that I went to, the little boy that was autistic, she'd been making visuals by drawing them on a piece of paper to help him know his schedule without even knowing he needed a visual schedule and why he needed one. Like, that is amazing to me, that a parent just falls on their instinct of, this is what my child responds to, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to find a way to do it by any means necessary. It doesn't, yes, it's nice to have a swing. Yes, it's nice to have a therapy ball, and we were fortunate to get those things donated, and that's going to make a difference for him to reach some of his gross motor, fine motor skills quicker, but he eventually would have gotten there, right? Because he is provided with access to what he gravitates to. And it was really that simple. Even the water beads. I mean, I brought water beads and I put water beads out, and I swear, like, six children were all in the water beads with him after about 20 minutes of him playing with water beads. And his mother was like, I can't believe he is allowing the children to be in his space so closely, right? Because of course he would line up the animals at the school, at the children's center, and nobody better touch the lineup of the animals. He would like hover his body over it. But guess what? All the children respected it. None of the children messed up his line. It was in the middle of the floor. No adult had to tell them. No one had to say anything. They just did it out of respect for, that's what he wanted, right? Which is a beautiful thing. And so he was in the water beads, and I told his mom, I said, that's because he's so regulated. He's smushing the water beads. He's getting that sensory input. So he's able to process the children in his space for a longer period of time. And when he'd had enough, he let them know he had enough. And guess what? They went away. And it was fine. They went and did something else. There was no adult hovering over Cher. You know, they have to play with you. You have to socialize the whole time. And it was just beautiful. It really was human instinct and caring for and having compassion without having to be told was probably, now that I'm processing and verbalizing, just the most beautiful experience that I was able to witness. Because as you said, we don't get to see that. And we need to have that. We need to have that. So I'm going to keep talking about what we need to do. And I'm going to keep coaching and educating, because it's the only way to shift the narrative. And, you know, I didn't have to do a lot of narrative shifting in Guatemala. I just had to do a little bit of coaching and teaching of strategies. And so that was nice. That was nice. I didn't feel as tired at the end of the day.
It's funny you mentioned that about parents and just sort of instinctually knowing what to do, because what the last podcast we recorded, which I believe will come out the week before this one, if my schedule is correct, I mentioned how I trust parents to understand their kids' needs, because they're going to have to, because I don't trust doctors.
Yes.
I call them the alphabet people because they have a whole can of alphabet soup next to their names. They spend so much time in school. They invest so much money. They're so much in debt. They've had any creativity beaten out of them, because if you don't do something exactly like a professor tells you, they fail you, that I don't expect them to be able to wrap their heads around the complexity that is a child with autism. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I think that's asking too much. Mm-hmm. I expect parents, because they're presumably they're related to the kid and they live with the kid and they care for the kid. So if they pay close attention, eventually they'll understand their needs.
Yes.
And you prove that that theory is correct, because they have no other choice in places like Guatemala, mm-hmm. because they don't have a lot of access to doctors. That's why the dentists were there. And as a result, they just do the right thing because instinctually they know what the right thing to do is, despite the complete lack of resources. Mm-hmm. So once again, that gives me hope, but I also need to reiterate, this is why I don't trust doctors. Yeah, because yeah. they can be so harmful. And one day we'll do an episode called, I think we have a long time ago, called The Alphabet People, mm-hmm. where I talk about, right, but it's basically just going to be ranting about how much I hate doctors. But I'm going to sound like Aaron Rodgers. But yeah, as we bring this in, I just want to say, this has been truly eye-opening, like legitimately no joke. I really expected, because I haven't, Stacey just got back and we haven't talked about her trip mm-hmm. yet, because I want to save it for the podcast so the reactions would be genuine. And I really expected a story like, you got there, all the autistic kids are covered in shit. They're all crying, they're all scratching, they're all melting down. The parents mm-hmm. are like stressed out, their hair is falling out or mm-hmm. going gray and frayed, and they're wide-eyed and bloodshot and just at their wits' ends dealing with their kids. And it's just the most nightmarish scenario. It's basically like a real life version of those like autistic mom groups you see on Facebook.
Yes.
I mm-hmm. expected some story like that, only with a lot more poverty. Yeah. And what you told me instead does sort of shift my narrative and also expose how much of an ignorant American a-hole I am. But it really was enlightening and I hope inspiring in some ways mm-hmm. for a lot of parents to show that it is possible and it doesn't take a crap ton of resources. It takes some ingenuity, some imagination, and it takes just creative thinking and mm-hmm. just relying on your instinct and mm-hmm. and blocking out the noise and knowing what is best for your kid. And then you combine that with, even if you're on the poorer side, third world poor is different, as I said yes. before. So there are still some resources you can add to this new found ingenuity thinking. So I hope that can help a lot of parents here who are in the situation I just described with the frayed hair and the bloodshot eyes and the meltdowns and the kids rolling yes. around and shit. I don't even know where the shit came from, but they're rolling around in it. Yes. So I do hope it does help some people.
You know, I will, for my final words, based on what you said, and you mentioned blocking out the noise. And so what I'd like for the listeners to take away from this episode is, the children that I met in Guatemala at the Children's Center genuinely don't care about differences. They're just kids are kids, right? They are playing with kids who don't talk. They're all playing together. There is no, oh, let's see how we can do inclusion, because there's no noise in their ears of stay away from that child. There's no noise in their ear about, you know, oh, that's the autistic child. Oh, don't touch his toys. They just work it out. And I say all the time, children are more accepting of differences until the adults put the noise in their ear, right? Whether it's racial differences or disability differences or whatever, religious differences, until the adults put the noise. So what I think has happened is, you know, if I think of the parents in Guatemala, the concern they had was not about following their instincts for their children. It was, what are the other people going to say? And I thought, oh my gosh, that's the problem we have in other countries that are not third world countries, in terms of that have amenities, that have expectations for everyone to graduate high school, everyone to go to college, is the noise in the ear of, if your child doesn't check off all the boxes, there's a problem, right? And so I think that for parents, I always say parents are the experts on their child. I just help them with the why. I talk to parents all the time that know exactly what works for their child, but then they get noise in their ear. Don't do that. That's not right. You're spoiling them. Oh, they shouldn't do that. Don't allow them to do that. It looks different. They hear noise, whether it's from the doctors, the teachers, other family members, the community, the people at the grocery store who are all up in their business. The noise is what prevents parents from following their instincts. The check boxes is what prevents parents from following their instincts. And the benefit of not having checkboxes of expectations for compliance and everyone has to be the same is the saving grace for those neurodivergent children in Guatemala, because their parents follow their instincts. And the children accept without being taught because it's modeled. It is modeled. I'm not saying that there's not going to be some pushback, right? The parents are people, you know, oh, why isn't he talking? But that's why they're getting educated, so they can explain. However, it's nowhere near the pressure of the parents not providing and allowing their children to be. It just makes them feel a certain way, because this is what I talked about with the families, but they still allow their children to be. They still love and embrace their child and allow their children to go and run freely and trust the other children will take care of them and engage with them. They're not worried about the other children's perspective. It's, you know, other adults who don't understand, but they still follow their instincts. And so that is a wonderful thing. You know, every situation has pros and cons, but we have such a mental health crisis. We have so much damage that is being done to autistic individuals in the United States and elsewhere. But, you know, I'm American with hesitation, but I am, this is, you know, where I'm from and what I see. And we need to shift our narrative, and we need to follow our instincts as parents, and we need to be inspired by the families that I met in Guatemala. And so I'm going to stop now and say thank you all for listening, because it is my first time sharing the stories, and it was wonderful, and I can't wait to go back. I'm like already thinking, okay, what am I gonna, not that I buy lots of stuff for me, I usually just eat, but I just want to save my money and go back.
Listen, you gotta get in that cartel trade. That's where the money's at.
Oh man, I gotta think about that. Okay, so you can decide to edit this out or not. I have to tell a story just to follow back with what you started with the cartel. So we were because and this is gonna be the closing story that's not related to autism, but we were going up the mountain and there was a sight of land, and the lady who was driving us said, oh, so there was this disco here, you know, because I was like, what used to be here? Because you can tell it's like this in the middle of the mountain where everyone's like living with no running water. There's this place that has like semi marble floors, and you're like, what the heck, like what was here, right? So apparently there was a guy who had money and bought this land and decided to start a disco with strippers in the middle of like this mountain in rural Guatemala.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So lots of people, of course, were going to this place with, you know, this disco, as they called it. And I said, oh, so what happened to the disco? And she said, well, apparently the money he used to buy the land, he stole from the cartel. They found him and shot him, killed him in the disco, and the disco's no longer there. That's hysterical.
Yeah, stealing from cartels, that's generally not good for your physical health.
It is not. It is not. It is not. But it is very indicative of the persistence and the commitment of the cartel to find the person who stole their money, where years later they located him in the middle of nowhere. Because you don't take. Lesson learned, do not steal.
And we think a wall is going to stop them. Anyway, Stacy, that's why we're working to
shift the narrative on everything autism everywhere around the globe.
See ya.